from Wondery. This is Business Wars. I'm David Brown. Next week, we'll be back with the first episode in a brand new series covering the famous feud between shoe giants Nike and Adidas. What started as a sneaker war devolved into multi-million dollar lawsuits, high-stakes sponsorship spats, and two giants in a $60 billion industry that exists in a weird cultural intersection of musicians, athletes, and fans of high fashion who just can't get enough of what started out as a humble shoe prized by sailors for their non-slip rubber soles. All that is coming up next week. I also wanted to thank you so much for listening to our show. We've had great response from you, our listeners, and if you haven't left us a review yet, we want to know what you think. We especially want to thank our sponsors for supporting us during this first series. Thank you, thank you, thank you to ZipRecruiter, Squarespace, ADT, LegalZoom, Quip, Anders, and Casper. And thank you to all of those listeners who use those promo codes we gave out. By visiting our sponsors' websites, you are directly supporting this podcast. And finally, do you have a topic that you would love for us to cover? You can tell us what you'd like to hear in the survey at wondery.com/survey. That's wondery.com/survey. If you've already taken it, thanks so much. And keep an eye out for the Business Wars feed, because your pick could be coming up soon. But first, we got to put an end to this war between Netflix, Blockbuster, and HBO, don't we? If you want even more information on this epic battle to the death, RIP Blockbuster, we remember you fondly, you should check out the book Netflixed, The Epic Battle for America's Eyeballs by Gina Keating. Gina wrote this series of Business Wars, so if you like what you've heard, you're going to love that book. Today, we wanted to get an outside perspective on this battle royale. I had the pleasure of talking to renowned media analyst Rich Greenfield, who's been covering this industry for two decades. He's the tech and media analyst for BTIG, but as you're about to hear, he's not just an analyst. He's a media futurist and someone who's been interested in this war since the very beginning. He joined us from his office in New York, and here's our conversation. Richard Greenfield, BTIG Research. Richard, thanks for taking a few minutes to speak with us on Business Wars.
Thanks for having me.
Now, we have to come out of the gate and be very clear and honest about this stuff, because we're talking about a company that you've been very fond of. You've had a buy recommendation on this company for quite a while, and you've gotten a lot of media attention for it. Do you own shares in this company yourself?
We do not own any shares in Netflix, nor any of the companies in the media universe that we cover and write about.
Let's begin by talking a little bit about 1997 and the year that was, when this story starts, actually. What were you doing?
In 1997, I would have been, at Goldman Sachs researching the media and tech sector.
So was Netflix on your radar screen or not so much?
Netflix was not on the radar screen at all. I mean, we were living in a world, essentially, where the DVD was in its early days of taking off and being a new, very significant revenue stream for the movie studios, basically replicating what had happened with VHS tapes over the prior decade plus.
That's interesting. So what were you really excited about in 97? Was it Blockbuster? Were they the kings or what?
You think about the movie business, it used to just be a theatrical business, and what VHS did, the predecessor to the DVD, was it created this whole home entertainment revenue stream. And so what you saw in the mid to late 90s was this huge surge of profitability as you were renting and selling this huge number of new and catalog DVDs. And so the entertainment business, which became instantly far more profitable and more valuable because of these ancillary revenue streams like the DVD. And so this was a huge new source of revenue and growth for movie studios.
Do you recall when you first heard about Netflix, this sort of upstart?
I think certainly not in 1997. I don't think it was on the radar screen at all. I mean, remember, in 1995, the DVD was just being created.
Right.
This was still very early days for DVD. It would certainly be as you got into the next decade, as the rental business started to take off and you were looking at alternatives to the traditional go to a Blockbuster store.
You know, it's interesting. I was trying to think about what the experience must be like for someone like you who follows the industry. I was trying to think, when was the first time that I streamed a video? And it might have been, gosh, not until 2003 or 4, something like that. Do you remember when you first tried streaming?
Well, it's funny. I was listening to your prior episodes when you were talking about when Netflix acquired the Starz rights, which was a seminal moment in the history of Netflix because they gained access to a tremendous number of Sony and Disney movies as part of it. But there was a predecessor service. Starz had its own streaming service. It was called Vongo, and they had shown it off to investors. It was losing probably $70 million a year. Investors were really worried about it. But I remember trying that service and trying to stream a movie through that service, and investors were panicking that Starz was losing too much money, and Starz was able to turn a $70 million loss a year and flip it to be a $70 million revenue stream, profit per year, by shifting those rights and sublicensing them to Netflix. And so basically by getting out of the streaming business, they turned a loss into a profit. But as you know, I think as your podcast shows, invariably to change the future of the media business by doing it.
You know, if you look back on this, and what I found rather interesting was how Reed Hastings of Netflix sort of kept his larger strategy close to his vest. And as you look back on how Netflix approached both Blockbuster and HBO, what do you think was Reed's smartest move?
You know, I think the initial approach, which was, we're no different than any other person that you sell your content to. You know, the whole media business has basically been driven historically. You create content and you try to sell it to as many different places as you possibly can all over the world.
Right.
And so that idea of, we're just another distribution outlet for content, what, you know, and that's, you know, take our money, it's good money. You need our money. We'll help you be more profitable. We'll get you, essentially addicted to our money, and then we'll learn from all of the content. We'll learn about consumer behavior, data and analytics that you actually, the seller, don't even have. But we as the buyer will understand, and then we'll actually go out and create content ourselves where we don't even need you anymore. I think that idea of kind of the Trojan horse of, you know, figuring out a way to, I want to say, play nice or make it seem like they were, you know, that there was a friendship versus the long term, we're going to go turn around and actually use it against you. And I think maybe the, if you think about the whole idea of binging, you know, it was brought up on during the Business Wars episodes of this idea of the Netflix effect. And I remember that vividly, you know, listening. Other companies would talk about the Netflix effect of something aired on television and it didn't do great ratings. But if you put it on Netflix, then when the new season started, everyone would start watching a show like Mad Men or Breaking Bad. The problem or the brilliance in many ways of Reed Hastings and the Netflix team was in those days, there was very little to binge. And so you would binge, and then you'd go back to watching live TV because there wasn't a tremendous amount of content on Netflix. But I think probably one of the most interesting strategic moves was that as he got more and more content, both new and old content, to binge, that what ended up happening is people ended up binging and then binging and never going back to live. And so I think in many ways, realizing that he had to start the flywheel. He convinced the studios that it was positive for them to get people to binge, even though that change in consumer behavior was permanent and unalterable as you fed it with more and more bingeable content.
It's fascinating. You know, you think back, I mean, in a way, you talk about that binge, you know, the Netflix effect. And I guess the biggest loser there, if you look at the larger sort of landscape of the business wars, if you will, probably was HBO, but even going back further, would it have been possible for Blockbuster to save itself? Or was there something just fundamentally wrong with its strategy or its approach or the business itself, do you think?
I would say in many ways, Blockbuster and even in the current environment, HBO, the challenge both companies face is really the same, which is they're public companies incentivized to drive earnings. And when you think about driving earnings, that isn't really there's a significant disconnect between driving earnings and building the business for the future. And when you think about building out streaming, whether you were Blockbuster, it was very financially painful, as you detailed, the difficult challenge they were having, basically running out of cash as they tried to build streaming.
Right.
HBO faces the same challenges. It's not easy to build a streaming business. And when you're trying to drive earnings, how much do you promote HBO now and try to disconnect from the ecosystem, especially when you're trying to sell the whole company the way Time Warner did? And so I think you run into similar balances that both companies, the root cause of their challenge in fighting Netflix is that Netflix wasn't focused on driving near-term earnings. They were focused on, quote-unquote, winning long-term. Mm. Very different management compensation objectives.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that goes to the root cause of why Blockbuster failed and why HBO is now a smaller business than Netflix.
Well, now I wonder, though, Netflix is reaching a kind of new maturity, I guess you could say, right now. And just at the end of 2017, I'm sure, as I'm sure you're aware, and perhaps many of our listeners know as well, Disney made an enormous investment in the content of Fox Studios, Fox Entertainment. I believe, what was it? Something in the order of $50 billion or more. Yeah, right? And they're thinking
We're talking about a $60 billion transaction.
Insane. I mean, well, you say insane, but then you look at the kind of space, the kind of marketplace that Netflix has created in a way out of whole cloth, and you wonder, are we talking about the future business war being between Netflix and Disney as it looks at possibly streaming?
When Netflix, early on, they used to say, I think Ted Sarandos actually first came up with the phrase of, we want to be HBO faster than HBO becomes us.
Right, right.
The reality is Netflix's ambitions were far above being HBO. They wanted to be HBO, Disney Channel, FX, ABC, CBS. They wanted to be everything. They basically wanted to replicate all of the content you get as part of the multi-channel bundle, mm-hmm. maybe excluding sports.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, they want to be everything but sports that you get out of a $80 to $100 multi-channel cable satellite subscription today. And so I think when you think of it through that lens, it's not Netflix versus Disney. It's Netflix versus all of these legacy media companies.
Mm.
Things like Time Warner and Viacom and Discovery, all of these companies are pitting, you know, that war for consumer time is what they're battling out with Netflix. And, you know, it's interesting when you think about the media companies and, you know, you bring up Disney buying Fox. To me, it's very much like that opening scene from March of the Penguins, where it's freezing cold, all the emperor penguins know winter is coming. They don't really, you know, the only strategy is to huddle up and kind of get bigger
mm-hmm.
so they can survive winter a little bit longer. That's sort of what Disney's doing with Fox. They're not fixing their problem of really understanding how to go to direct to consumer, but they're getting a lot bigger and bulking up to deal with this significant change in consumer behavior, which essentially is in this case, you could call it kind of their winter.
We get support from Airbnb. Staying in an Airbnb is often one of my favorite parts of a trip, especially on business travel. Instead of slogging to another hotel and waiting in line after you've been driving or flying all day, there is nothing better than landing in a place that, well, really feels like a home away from home. Maybe you've stayed in an Airbnb before and thought to yourself, you know, this actually seems pretty doable. Maybe my place could be an Airbnb. Well, I'm here to tell you it could be. You could be sitting on an Airbnb and not even know it. It might be as simple as starting with your spare room, or maybe even your whole place when you're away. Say you and your family are headed away for a much-deserved spring break. Well, why not Airbnb your place and make some extra money towards the trip? Win-win. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Let's face it, after a night with drinks, it can be hard to bounce back the next morning. But let me tell you, if there's a surefire way to wake up feeling fresh after a night of drinking, It's with ZBiotics. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for that rough next day. ZBiotics produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make ZBiotics your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. I have a friend who had to go to a major conference the night before. Well, you know how these pre-conference cocktail sessions can go. But he cracked open a bottle of ZBiotics before that first drink. The next day, he got up feeling ready to give that presentation his 100%. Head on over to ZBiotics.com/BW to get 15% off your first order when you use BW at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/BW and make sure to use the code BW at checkout for 15% off.
Now you got me thinking, because if you think of Disney through that lens, you know, as a legacy company that hasn't quite yet figured out how to be that all-in-one, then you think about a newer competitor, someone who definitely is thinking about being everything, Amazon. Is that the bigger threat to Netflix, do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, when you think about Jeff Bezos, you know, think about his, you know, much quoted, you have to lean into the future. And you think about how Amazon is trying to lean into the future and create a bundle of products and services at a great price value to the consumer, with, you know, voice navigation, with the Alexa, and trying to put Alexa into every device, cars, homes, etc. Absolutely. I think you have to look at the long-term competitive threat from companies like Apple and Amazon. They understand, you know, Amazon knows everything about you, right? They know everything you've bought. They know everything that you thought about buying. They know everything you've hovered over. They know a tremendous amount about you and your household. That is incredibly valuable as you try to think about content creation. Compare that to companies like Disney, which you brought up, or Fox. They don't know who you are. They have no direct relationship with you. You know, you may buy a ticket for one of their movies. You may watch one of their TV shows, but they don't know who you are. They don't have a direct relationship. And I think that data and analytics is incredible. I mean, think about what Netflix is doing. When you pull up that Netflix screen with all of those titles, it's not just a list of titles. The actual cover art is actually personalized you based on what will drive you to click most. The level of kind of A/B testing and analytics is so far beyond just a simple list. And that's part of the secret sauce that, again, it's not just, you know, it's not like Disney's going to launch a website and put up a lot of content and all of a sudden they're going to have tremendous engagement. It's just not that simple. There's so much more to it that I think is neglected when investors think about the threat from Disney. Mm-hmm. And so I think I agree with you. The greater threat is from companies that live and breathe data and have, you know, tons of data, whether that be Apple, Amazon, Google, Facebook. As those companies get bigger in the content space, I think they actually pose greater long-term threats, especially with their global footprints and access to consumers across all devices, than simply the content creation. I think it's a lot easier for tech companies to get into content than it is for content companies to get into tech. It's just not in the DNA of content companies to invest in tech.
That's really that's an interesting observation. But you mentioned Apple, and Apple doesn't seem to have been nearly as aggressive as some of these other players, notably Amazon, obviously. Google is scratching an itch, clearly, too. But do you think if Steve Jobs had lived that Apple might have been a bigger threat in this area over the past 7 years, or not so much?
I think Apple really wanted to work with the legacy ecosystem and tried to play nice with it. And I think they realized that it was simply not possible to create the service they wanted at the price points and value proposition to the consumer. Mm. And so the only way to rectify it was to go out and basically build it from scratch. And so I think, you know, they made a couple of very big hires last summer, and they've greenlit. I mean, we're just the early parts of 2018. I think there's already five new shows for 2019 have been greenlit from Apple. So I think you're going to see Apple spend several billion dollars on content creation for 2019, you know, shows that are in production today that'll come out. And so I think your perception of them being quote unquote behind, which is certainly accurate and fair, I think you'll have a very different perspective before we reach the end of this decade.
Interesting, interesting. So who do you think, or do you think that there's a sort of underrated player in this industry space right now?
I don't think you would say underrated. I mean, I think, you know, the reality is Netflix has been really aggressive and kind of completely focused on only one thing, which is streaming video. Mm-hmm. You know, the problem that, you know, I mean, think about Disney. They've got cable networks and theme parks and broadcast. They have so many assets fighting for time and attention. They're not all in on just doing streaming. Amazon, you could say the same thing. It's one piece of a very large company. Apple, obviously the same thing applies. So I think in many ways, the singular focus that Netflix has actually been their greatest advantage, that the entire company, especially after they split off the DVD business, has been focused on only doing one thing and doing that better than anyone else. There's lots of what I would call potential competitors or growing competitors, but in terms of, you know, somebody that isn't being focused on, no, I don't think there's anyone that fits that. I just think that there's a lot of players that this is not their entire existence, and it makes it very hard for them to have the level of success that Netflix has had, since, because it's not their sole focus.
Yeah. You know, you look back, you think about some of those business wars, how they developed over the years, you know, between HBO and Netflix and HBO and Blockbuster. And obviously, there was a lot of hubris on the part of a lot of players. Nobody was completely innocent here, clearly. But
Albanian Army comment, yeah, you know, will resonate in my mind forever. I mean, I still remember that comment being made. And, you know, you look back now and Netflix, from a market cap standpoint, is larger than all of Time Warner. Not just HBO, but all of Time Warner.
It's amazing. It's just amazing. But I wonder if you were to pull back and say, okay, well, this is the takeaway for any business, for any industry. Is there one? What would you point to?
I think you would have to focus on one thing, which is an obsession with the consumer. You know, I think the mistake that most companies in the media sector that I've looked at for 20 plus years make is that they focus and start with the business model. What Netflix did is they wanted to serve the consumer. Yeah, the content at first wasn't the best, as you've noted on Business Wars, but it got better. But they focused on the consumer experience. Yeah. The value proposition. They put the consumer at the center of everything they did, including the apology they made, right? Mm-hmm. Was all about making sure they stayed true to the consumer and made the consumer the center of attention. You could cancel at any time. You don't have to remain a member. Couple clicks of a mouse and you're done. There's no, you know, that whole idea of putting the consumer first. I mean, I remember when they came out with House of Cards, one of the, you know, when you think about the experience that opening weekend 5 years ago, it was, they're crazy. People are going to sign up, stream House of Cards, and then they're going to cancel.
Yeah, right.
That was a real fear that people had in their heads. But it served the consumer, not putting episodes out week after week, letting people binge. They created that kind of consumer happiness. Mm-hmm. Not having ads. Again, they could make lots of money by selling ads. People have asked me, when is Netflix going to do ads?
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
But consumers don't want ads. They want to just consume the content. And so focusing on the consumer rather than focusing on the business model, I think, is what has been their single greatest driver of their success and why their competitors have all failed on a relative basis heretofore.
Richard Greenfield studies this industry at BTIG Research. Richard, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thanks so much for taking a few minutes out of your day to speak with Business Wars.
Thanks for having me.
And so we wrap up our series on Netflix, Blockbuster, and HBO. Next time on Business Wars, we'll be starting a brand new series on another business war. Next time, it's Nike versus Adidas. I think I know which one my son wants to win. Business Wars is hosted by yours truly, David Brown. This episode is produced by Karen Lowe. Executive producers are Hernan Lopez and Marsha Louie for Wondery.
I feel like I was blindsided.
Because it's a competition show.
From the producers of Jury Duty and The Bachelor.
We have scoured the earth for the 14 greatest reality contestants that were available during our production window.
Comes a reality competition show about reality competition shows.
Nobody has dared to find out who is the actual best at just being on a reality show. I'm your host, comedian Daniel Tosh.
It's win or go home.
Each episode, our contestants will face new challenges that will test their strength and lack of life skills for a chance to win $200
million.
$200,000.
Prepare, because it's about to be ugly, crying, lots of fighting.
Tayshia, I have to defend myself.
Celebrating 25 years of reality TV with your favorites.
I have diarrhea. You cannot do this to me.
What in gay hell have I got myself into?
The GOAT, premiering on Freevee and Prime Video on May 9th.